Well, good day to you. It's Joel with The King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
Hey everybody, it's me, Dave, one half of Dadville. Now, I've been a singer-songwriter for the last 20 years or so, but about 10 years ago, my dear friend and manager at the time pushed me to try to start doing some stand-up shows. If you've been to any of my live music shows, you know I'm chatty and love to tell stories and jokes, so it made sense. So, I was just dumb enough to try it. Since then, I've done about 30 or so stand-up shows, and that means no guitar, just me and the mic and my funnies. About 4 years ago, I did a stand-up show here in Nashville at City Winery, and we recorded the show, and that show is now an album called It's Hard Being an Idiot, and is available on Spotify, Apple Music, and everywhere you listen to music and comedy. To celebrate the release of the album, I thought it would be fun to do some interviews with some of my favorite stand-up comedians to talk about not just being funny, but being professionally funny. And oh my goodness, is Leanne Morgan funny. She is so fun. I cackle through this interview. I mean, genuinely, she has me in stitches throughout this interview. She's just funny. She's like, you know, you could stick her in a corner at a supper club or give her a mic in front of thousands of people and she's going to make you laugh. That's how she is. She's born that way. You know, I was trying to remember how I heard about her. It might have been on Facebook through like a Dry Bar ad, which I found out about a bunch of comics. A bunch of comics had been on this podcast that way. Or it might have been my sister Beth sent it to me. I can't remember. I just remember that one, when I heard her, I remember laying in the bed. I was on my phone. Annie, my wife, was asleep. I was laughing so hard I genuinely thought, I'm going to wake my wife up. I'm going to wake her up from how much I'm shaking the bed from convulsing and laughter. And then I remember too, I sent the videos to everybody I knew and everybody thought it was hysterical. In fact, since then I have friends who've been to her shows because they were like, she is killing me. So I think that's fun. One of the things I want to say that I loved about this interview is it moved me so much to hear how intentional she was with her time as she was coming up as a comic. She talks about she's been in the game about 20 plus years, but with her girls, she just didn't want to miss them growing up. And so it's so inspiring to hear how she sort of managed her time on weekends to go do stand-up bits and, you know, do weekend shows as she was, you know, it's really inspiring and not just funny, but really moved me to see how much intentionality she had around her gift and trying to be a good steward of it. And I would say lastly, you know, there's no reason in some ways this should be funny to me. I'm not a woman. I'm not in the season of life she is. I'm not a mom. I'm not an empty nester, but it slays me. And that is a tribute to how funny she is. She's like all the Southern women you ever loved and made you laugh. She's all those wrapped into one. So here's Leanne Morgan. Okay, folks, this is a huge pleasure. I mean, Leanne Morgan is with me, and I want to tell you, I have been so excited about this, Leanne. One, because we're kind of people. We got some of the same dirt, which is really exciting because I just found out that you're in Farragut, which is, you know, where I spent a couple of my high school years. But I'm just amazed we don't have a million. I'm sure if we played that game, we would know a million the same people. But
I bet we would, my darling. I bet we would.
This, but I have to tell you, I probably got hip to your stuff probably 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. And it was, I just remember feeling like I had hit like this gold mine, and I started sending it to everybody I knew. And I remember, I can't remember if my sister had heard of you before me or not, but it became this thing for us where it was like, we have found this wonderful thing and the whole world needs to know about it. And we felt doubly invested because I didn't know where you were in West Tennessee, but I was like, or East Tennessee rather. I was like, but where? Okay, she's got to be somewhere. And that makes me even doubly invested in sort of making sure. But the thing that's crazy that I feel like I've watched is it feels like in those 3 years, like you're going to be vice president here soon. It just feels like everything is exploding for you. Like it has been so much fun to watch. It feels like you're just taking the world by storm.
Thank you, my darling. Well, and where is Kamala? Has anybody seen her? I may have to take off.
We don't know.
I know. What have they done with her?
She and the Chinese Olympian girl. They just both disappeared.
I know, Dave. I'm worried.
I'm scared.
Okay. Well, I've been doing comedy 22 years, and it was about 3 years ago, you're right, when it kind of blew up. But I've been doing it 22 years.
22 years. Okay, let's go back, because this is, it's always fun for me to kind of get the background. So you're from around where I am now, though, aren't you? Central
yes.
Tennessee.
I was raised in Adams on the Kentucky-Tennessee border, where the Bell Witch is.
Yes. That's just coincidental, right?
Yeah, but I tell people the Bell Witch legend and to Google it. But yeah.
Oh, I know
the
Kentucky-Tennessee
border near Clarksville. I was raised in Adams, Tennessee, 500 people. And then I went to the University of Tennessee. And that's where I made horrible decisions in the 80s. But I've been washed in the blood. And I met my husband and several other people that you would not wipe your feet on at the University of Tennessee. And then I married my husband, Chuck. And then I had three precious, beautiful children, and now I've got my first grandbaby.
I know. I saw a picture, and I mean, are you just, don't you just want to dip them in chocolate and just eat them like an anaconda? Just not even bite. Just,
it's the best thing that's ever happened to us. And you know, and I love my children, and I could have had, I wish I'd had 10 of them, but there's something about a grandbaby that is different.
Yeah.
And it is crazy. Like my husband, who is tight and cheap and does not believe in spending money, is like, he needs a long cabin. He needs a tractor. He needs a lawnmower. He's 11 months old. He is so yummy.
Don't you wonder what unlocks that? And especially because I've seen the same in granddads. Like I've seen it, like there's something about men at that age that there's, when they see their grandkids, all of a sudden it's like the things that as a child you never got. They're like, I will give this grandchild in droves.
Yes, and I wonder if his testosterone has lowered. And I also, he doesn't have to make a living for this baby. He had to make a living for everybody else.
That's so true.
And my little daddy, Jimmy Fletcher, who has two daughters and we're both sissy, bought my son's the first grandchild, and he went and bought him a machete when he was like 7 years old. And I'm like, Daddy, he cannot have a machete. He goes, he wanted it. Have you ever?
He had just been waiting to get little like guy gifts. He just had, and you know, it came with like a, you know, red man and a machete. You know, like,
and my people dip red man. My people grew dark fire tobacco in Adams, Tennessee.
I was gonna say because I remember you saying it was farms. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So tell me this: like, did you were your parents funny? Like, is your humor something that came from them? One of them, both of them?
I think so. My little daddy is a really good storyteller, and my mama Lucille has got charisma and is funny off the cuff, and is, you know, and people want to be around her. She's got something about her. People love her and want to be around her. And her mama, Mary, could be hateful, but very funny, very fiery, we were scared of her. But little short Irish woman who was as wide as she was tall, and she very funny, but and my granddaddy, he was quiet, but I think he was a good storyteller too. But we all, I mean, I had grandmamas and step grandmamas and different people that were, yeah, we laughed a lot and had a good time. We really did.
Yeah.
I'm
always curious about that. So were you like, when in high school, were you someone that people knew as funny?
Yes,
like,
I was funny, but things? Dave, I was also the cutest. Well, I shouldn't say that. But I was a beaut, honey. I was cute in my pants, and I was, you know, thin. I just ate off the farm. I didn't eat processed foods. I look back on it and I think, man, I was kind of frail. But anyway, you know, but back then, I mean, we were like almost like cavemen. We didn't eat, you know, Debbie's.
Yeah.
And I was tall and dynamic. And, but yeah, you know, they would get, and I made out with a lot of people in the church parking lot. I did. Methodist.
We were
Methodist. And, you know, it was just kind of kumbaya. Yeah. And I made out with a lot of people. But then, I was funny. But, and I knew it in my heart. In my, you know, I'd tell stuff for my family and my grandparents. Everybody'd clap, you know, like Hercules. But But my teachers would say, "Let's Leanne, can you MC this? Leanne, can you get up and do the awards?
Yes.
Leanne,
yes.
can you do that?" Yes. And they probably thought, she's a ham, she'll do it. But I always did that. My choir director, who I love, who is darling, Roger Bunch, I could not carry a tune in a bucket, but I was fun, and he wanted me in the choir, and so he put me in the front, and I dazzled, and I just went,
no.
And acted like I was singing, but they wanted me on the bus because I was fun. You know, this, Dave, I think this is another thing. I'm not a butthole. And I think that I've got a sweet spirit. I mean, there's a lot of, I got a lot of flaws. There's a lot of terrible things wrong with me, but I'm a sweet spirit. So I think, you know, I always had a lot of friends. I could make friends easy. We'd laugh, we'd have a ball, you know. Yeah, but my mama's like that.
Our next partner has a product that gives you more energy and an optimized immune system. I started taking Athletic Greens for just that reason. With the kids' schedules, touring, or writing sessions, I hardly have enough time to blink, much less think about my nutrition. I've taken AG1 by Athletic Greens and can totally see the difference in my daily energy level. With so much stress in life, Athletic Greens makes it so simple to maintain healthy nutritional habits and give our bodies the nutrients they need to survive. Just one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, your body is absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and buckle up for this one, adaptogens. I use AG1 by Athletic Greens because it ensures I keep a healthy lifestyle with my busy schedule. When on the road, it's so hard to eat healthy. Fast food or convenience store fare is less than desirable, especially in the nutrition department. I use Athletic Greens because it keeps me on track when eating healthy is hardest. AG1 contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals, and certainly no artificial anything. When you subscribe to Athletic Greens, they even throw in a year's supply of vitamin D, which is crucial during these winter months when it seems like sunlight is basically gone for good. For less than $3 a day with Athletic Greens, you can invest in your health. I guarantee you that's cheaper than your Starbucks habit. Oh, I'm looking at you. Supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/dadvil. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/dadvil to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. That sort of changes, you know, one of the things that's been really fun about doing this podcast and interviewing all the friends I was telling you about is that, you know, it seems to be there's kind of a couple reasons that people get really funny. Is it's either their way of surviving high school and college or, you know, kind of early life, whatever that is, because you learn like, oh, man, humor can be this thing that can, you know, get me out of a bind or get me friends or whatever, right? And it seems to be that a lot of comedians, I mean, are pretty introverted, kind of heady folk, which I didn't, you know, I don't have like a lot of comedian friends at all. I have a lot of hysterical friends, but they're not professional comedians, you know. And it tends to be that the more I meet that world, the more they're kind of more quiet, sort of insulated, insular people. And so you're sort of ruining two paradigms in that, one, you were like cute and popular in high school, and then two, that you're kind and sort of, you know.
Well, I don't feel like I'm twisted and dark and the world's coming to an end.
But
I did have stuff happen to me in my childhood, painful things that I probably coped by being funny. So that, I do have some of that too.
Yeah. So do you remember, like, do you remember the, I mean, this is maybe too on the nose question, but do you remember being funny the first time? Like, do you have a memory of you saying something and people really responding, whatever that scenario was? That you could have been 5 at a birthday party, or you were at your church and you got on the mic, or was there ever
I don't remember specifics, but I remember being 5 because my family owned the grocery store in that little town, and my mama would work the cash register and smoke cigarettes and dazzle. And I remember standing out talking and people standing around me and listening. And I was 5.
Even at that age.
And I can tell you this, Dave, God revealed to me at 5 that I was going to be doing this. I knew it in my heart.
You at that age.
And let me tell you this. I've had people just lately say to me, we were in San Antonio at a show at the Majestic 3 nights ago or 4 nights ago, when I'm losing track of time. And my sister brought some girls that she was in a sorority with at Austin Peay on the trip to San Antonio. And one of them said to me, she goes, Leanne, I remember you coming to help your sister move in and your parents move her into the dorm room. And that's the first time I ever met Beth. And she said, I said to you, what is your name? And she said, you had on a basketball uniform and you were bouncing a basketball. So I know I was in, it was my freshman year of high school because my sister's 3 years older than me. So she was a,
in college.
And Margo said to me, what is your name? And I said, I'm Leanne and I'm going to be famous. I'm going to be a star. And she said, she went, okay. And I said, I did. I said, I'm so sorry. I was so arrogant. But she said, you were bouncing a basketball. And I can tell you, I was a big tomboy and I loved sports. And at that time, then I got a boyfriend and I screwed that, all that over, didn't care and didn't hustle. But anyway, I said, Margo, did I really say that? And she goes, yes. And then my mama, they're burying her today. My mom's good friend, Margaret.
Oh, I'm so
sorry. I know, but she's in glory now, Dave, because she had terrible cancer and she is no longer suffering. Oh. But Margaret would work for them at the store, and my mom would sit and smoke cigarettes together and talk. And she would say to me, she said to me as a grown woman not too long ago, Leanne, I knew it. I knew you were going to be doing this when you were a little bitty girl. We all knew it. And I thought, what was I doing? I guess I was tap dancing, honey, on concrete in an old country grocery store. Because Lord knows I didn't have. My mama didn't drive until she was 43. So we lived out in the middle of the country.
Gosh.
And I never took a lesson. I always wanted to learn how to dance and tap and do all that. And I never got to do any of that because they worked all the time and she didn't drive. So I don't know where I got it. But I knew. I remember Adams had a talent show, and I put myself in the talent show when I was five, and I was going
doing what
I was going to dance to Cher, Sonny and Cher. What was that song? Cherokee Nation, Cherokee Tribe. Remember?
Oh, I don't know. All I can think of is the Tim McGraw song.
He had one too that mentioned the Cherokee. But Cherokee, whatever that song was, and I had a very politically incorrect dance thing going to the thing, but I had my little record player that you could open and close. It would play if it closed, and my sister freaked out. She was so shy and older than me, and she took me out of the contest and said, it's embarrassing, you can't do this. And and still to this day she'll go, I'm so sorry I did that. And I go, Beth, you need to let that go. I probably would have won, but that, I'm okay. I've let that, I've healed from that. You don't need to sit. She sits and, drink a glass of wine and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I took you off that talent. Yeah. And I'm like, it's okay.
You'd have been living in Beverly Hills right now, just, like you and whoever the hot star is, just drinking your mimosas at your pool, looking out over the Hollywood Hills.
Well,
I did
think I was going to be an it girl. And I'm 56 years old and I've got a stomach now and horrible things are happening to me. But I still, in my mind, I'll think, oh, I'm going to be the next hit girl. I'm going to be Charlize Theron. And I'm not.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So do you feel like, so you had confidence basically that you really felt like, okay, I've got this thing and I just got to figure out what to do with it. You even felt that thing, like growing up.
I did.
You had that kind of confidence.
I did. And I had my mama, Lucille, going, you can do it. You can do it. You can do anything. And then in my high school, I graduated 42 people. We had a speech and drama class and we would do improv. And I've loved it. I felt at home. I feel like I thrived in it. And this was crazy. In my little bitty class, there were four boys that, started a band called the Red River Boys, and they got a couple of record deals. And then One of them went on to be go to Juilliard and is an actor. And so we had all these creative people in that class, and we would do these speech and drama, and I loved it. But then I got to UT, and I think in my mind, I'd think, well, that's crazy. Am I cuckoo? I can't do that. That doesn't make, you know, and then I'd go through times where I didn't have the confidence but being from a small town, I didn't know, just go to LA. Yeah. Oh, there are people who go, I didn't know what to do and how to do it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. So before we moved to Knoxville, I grew up in a town of 8,000 people in Mississippi. I was there from first to 10th grade. And it's interesting, you know, I look back now and I'm so thankful for growing up there because it was the best thing in the world. Like, I mean, you know, just all those movies or country songs you hear where it's a quaint little, that was where I grew up. It was the best. But I also think that by the time we left, I was ready for something a little bigger. Like, I was just getting interested in music. I was, you know, starting to get in skits and things, and which I thought was so fun. And there was, to your point, there just wasn't a place for it in that town. There was that wasn't even a thing, you know? So from us to then move to Knoxville where, you know, we had like a drama department at Farragut, and I knew 10 people that played an instrument, like a electric guitar. And it was very good that I got out of that because all of a sudden, to your point, I was like, oh, this is something people do. Because in Mississippi, I was like, I don't know, like movie stars do this or whatever. You know, like rock and roll star, I don't know who plays music, you know. So it was good that I got out in time to sort of see that, you know, and sort of go, oh, this is an option. But even at UT, that was not something you were considering.
No. You didn't think, and like, I was overwhelmed, and I had left, I chased a boy there, my high school boyfriend, and I thought, I'm not staying here long. I don't need this degree. We're going to get married, and I'm going to raise a bunch of tobacco and children and cans. My own food. And then I was coming off the youth fellowship group, and he was drinking in a fraternity, and I nagged him until he broke up with me. And I never thought, go and sign up for theater class. And I had my you know, God love them, but I had people in my family going, you need to be, as a woman, you need to be a secretary, or you need to be a teacher, or you know, these are the things, a nurse, or you need to be. And I just remember thinking, but that's not what I want to do. I'm going to be in Hollywood, but I don't know what, and I guess I got to get a degree now. And what, and so through, and then I started making horrible decisions and lived a lot of life, Dave. And then, and then I quit UT, then went back to UT. And then I had the guts to go and try to sign up for a theater class. And then this woman in a tight bun at UT in the theater said, if you're not majoring in this, get out. And I'm a rule follower. I didn't take it then. Yeah. But I really don't think I'm a theater person anyway. I think that was all in God's plan. So I marry my husband and I get pregnant with my first baby. We're in the foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. He owns a used mobile home business. And I start selling jewelry so that I can be with other women, meet people, and make a little money for myself because I want to stay at home and breastfeed. Yeah. And then I started selling this jewelry that I cared nothing about. I hate to say that, but I'm not a jewelry person. I cared less about it. My friend was selling it. And I would get up and I would schlep this jewelry around, and I would lay that jewelry out, and I'd eat brownies. And I was supposed to be talking about jewelry, and I kind of had a shtick, and I started developing an act.
So then the
company noticed that I was booking like a year in advance for these parties because people thought I was funny.
And oh my!
That's
gosh.
How I got started in comedy. So somebody peed on a couch one night. I'm not kidding. And I thought, in my mind, that was one of those moments where I thought,
that is amazing.
I thought, I got it. I know. Wait. I've got it.
You've got literal proof.
And Chuck proof. And I, when we were dating, went to see my sister in Southern California, and I went to the Comedy Store. I told him, I go, I want to go to a comedy club.
Oh, yeah.
And we went, and I remember thinking the whole time, like, I couldn't even sit still because I thought, I'm supposed to be doing this. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. But I wanted a family, and I married Chuck, and then, you know, I don't even know what I was thinking. But I had my first baby, and then I started selling that jewelry. And I'm telling you, it was all God's plan. When I look back on it, He had me little comedy clubs in East Tennessee with women, my demographic.
Yeah.
And then the company asked me to start speaking at their big things. And you remember Dennis Swanberg, the Christian comedian?
Yeah.
Dennis was hired to be the entertainment at this, because this was a Christian jewelry company. And he came up to me after I spoke. I was supposed to be speaking about how I was getting booked so far in advance. And he said, you need to be a stand-up. And to me, and to me, having somebody say that, that did that professionally, gave me the strength to go, okay, I'm going to do it. I know I can do it. And women would come up to me and that tell must me be, I need to be a stand-up.
Yeah. They would say, I just pee on the couch. You should do this for a living. You know, isn't it, that has to be affirming to know that. This is one of the things I love about just giftedness, like the when people have something that they're really good at. It didn't matter where you were. I mean, you were literally in, you know, in the foothills, as you said, of Appalachian Mountains, selling jewelry, and still you had this gift that was so obvious and so effective. Like it was powerful that people could see you selling jewelry in living rooms, which just makes me laugh. But you were still so good at it that people were like, there's however many of us in this room, but we are all in agreement. Like, you're really good at this. And I think that's such a cool thing. And it must be affirming. I would hope it's affirming you to see that you were like, wow, you could stick you anywhere. And somebody was going to go like, Leanne, you are really funny. And I think that's obviously very different than the traditional route where you just get out and you start going and you're hitting it hard. But in some ways, I would imagine is probably even more encouraging, because it was almost like people, you had so many people around you, I'm sure, going, you got to go, like pushing out of the nest to go, which is so, I love that. That's so powerful.
Well, and if I had, so then my husband sold that business and went to work for a large mobile home company, moved us to South Texas. San Antonio is where we lived, and I had a comedy club for the first time. So I went and did open mic, scared out of my mind. And you're right. If I'd have started doing open mic somewhere at 18 years old or whatever, it's no telling what would have happened to me. I mean, I just was not ready for it.
Yeah.
And really, Dave,
Right.
I don't think I had anything interesting to say. When I was 18, I would have talked about my thighs. You know, I mean,
Right.
And now I had, by the time I got started, I had three babies. We moved across the United States, and then I would drive back and forth to Austin, Cap City Comedy Club, one of the best comedy clubs in the United States, and they believed in me and said,
wow.
I would go to Chick Stick and do 10 minutes on the night where they let women get up, and the manager who I saw in Durant, Oklahoma two nights ago, who's been my dear friend, she believed in me and moved me from opener to headliner for the first time in their history.
Wow.
So that was 20 years ago, and things started happening for me pretty quickly. And I say that, but I mean, I raised three children. Mainly three children were my priority.
Yeah,
and my husband's an executive, so he was traveling and doing. But I was able to carve out a career. I knew it couldn't be a traditional way in clubs every week. I couldn't have raised my own children.
Yeah, right.
So I had to find another way. And I found it, and I never had to hire anybody to take care of these children. And I had
amazing.
Them all. And I've had Hollywood after me for years. I've had four development deals, and I'm on my fourth one right now. No, the other three did not make it, but they were with ABC, Nick at Night, TV Land.
Jeez.
And I was living in Knoxville, back in Knoxville, Tennessee, had three babies.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. So tell me this first question of that, because I'm really fascinated with this. I have this whole theory, and I've told this to the other comics I've had on. I'm so curious to see what you think, but I feel like there are people who are funny. I feel like people, and this is I've butchered this every time I've said it, so forgive me. But I feel like people are basically comedians, or I think of them in two different types of comedians. Right? You have the people who are kind of like bit comedians, like they have little minute pops, you know, bam, bam, and they're going through, and they're, you know, and everything's kind of developed around the bit. But then I think there are people who are kind of storytellers. You know, they just kind of, like, you strike me as one of these where I think if you are at any place you are, that could be a coffee shop in Green Hills, and you get a couple of people around you, it's just, here we go. Buckle up, because it's going to be, you know, because you love to tell, and you're funny. And it's that really powerful combination of someone who's just really funny, who gets some way to think about humor as it is. And so when you talk, that's how you talk. You just talk about funny stuff. And I think you're that way. So what was where the others, I think, are a lot more, you know, they're working on bits.
Right.
It's about like,
and I don't have that. I don't have that gift. That's not how I.
Oh, that's
me not my thing
at all.
And
at
I
all.
Admire people who can do that. You know.
Yeah, it's amazing. But with that said, did you find that it was hard to do open mic nights? Because when I think of storytellers, you know, a story can take you 10 minutes, and you're probably going to tell a million funny jokes inside the 10 minutes, but you still got to tell the story.
Right.
Right? Like, so did you find those open mics to be tricky, where you'd show up and you're like, gosh, this story about, you know, obviously the swim dress is later in life, but something like that where you're going, okay, I can't do that
right.
in 3 minutes.
And that's what, yes, know? And I was terrified and felt like I was going to vomit. And it just did not feel right to me. You know, it just didn't feel good to me. And then they started, they would let me go up at the late night, they called it, in San Antonio, and everybody was high on marijuana and drunk. And it'd be midnight, and I'd been up with kids from school, and, you know, felt like I had the flu. And then I would have to do, you know, 10 minutes or something, and I would be talking about how somebody doo-dooed on a t-ball field. And there, and I'm talking to 21-year-olds, you know, that are high. But anyway, all those steps, they've been wonderful and excruciating.
But it still had to make them laugh.
Oh, well, I think they did.
Yeah.
But...
No, they did. Mm-hmm. So how did you navigate... this is amazing, and I want to just... I can't... praise you enough for this, because this is, you know, in Dadville, we talk about this a lot with dads, is how to navigate that space where, you know, Andy Stanley, who's this passionate.
Honey, I know Andy, and Andrew's open for me.
Come on,
Andrew,
son.
Oh,
look at that. Andrew is his son is a
so
riot.
Funny.
A riot.
Yes.
So funny. But Andy did a sermon series called Choosing to Cheat, in which I thought was like maybe the most licentious. I was like, how dare you talk about that from the pulpit? But what he basically said was, you know, you're either going to cheat your family or your career, and one will always be cheated. And that was early in my music career, but it really stuck with me. I thought, you know, wow, that feels right to me. Like, one is going to suffer as the other prospers, but you get to pick, you know. And it sounds like you somehow navigated that really well. I can't imagine how hard that would have been. But as I was saying, to encourage you, it's amazing you've done that. I want to first just applaud that. That's such an amazing feat. But how in the world did you... So did you do a lot of private shows?
I did a lot of private.
Were you doing like a lot of...
Okay. And if somebody said, will you come up here and do, you know, 30 minutes for the people who volunteer at the hospital, and we'll pay you cafeteria food. I did it. I did whatever I could.
Yep.
So I did a lot of private corporate. I did a lot of fundraisers. I did some churches, but you know, the Christian entertainment business is hard to get into. If you're not in it, you're kind of on the outside.
Yeah.
So they are just not.
Well, doesn't it feel a little tricky? I always get a little giggly at these things, because people are really funny, but you can see that they've also got a little bit of a point they're going to make. You know, like, funny, but listen, I want to tell y'all something. You're like, whoa, okay, this has got...
You know, and I felt like, from the word go, I felt like God was not calling me to do that, to be in the Christian entertainment industry. Because I did talk about peeing in a bathing suit one time at a church, and somebody said something like, you know, that you can't say that. And I thought, you know, peeing's normal. And that has nothing to do with my salvation.
Jesus
So I feel like God... always put me in these, you know, in clubs and in other situations where and if I did do some kind of Christian entertainment, it was fun, but I wasn't as successful.
And
I did feel like I had to hold back, even though I'm a clean comedian, but I want to talk about real.
Right.
You know, I want to be real.
Right.
And I don't want that to, you know, but so, I look back on it and I think, I've done little tours. I mean, God just put me in places I was supposed to be. I did little tours with two other women called the Southern Fried Chicks. And we did like 50 dates a year. And it'd be on the weekend. My husband could take care of the kids while I was gone. And and I was really the opener for them. They were both very seasoned comedians. And I would go out first. But that gave me experience. And I worked in these beautiful theaters and with them. And... And that was something that I could do, and made me look legit to Hollywood and that kind of thing, to have those dates. But I did maybe four or five clubs, the same clubs every year, and I could not get past that. Like, nobody wanted to book me because they didn't know me, because I wasn't this hard road comic, you know. And I kind of have a chip on my shoulder now that I'm doing this big tour and everything. I wonder if, you know, people that have done comedy for years that have never met me in clubs think, oh, she's not legit because she went out here doing road comedy. But you know what, Dave? If they think that, I've gotten to the point now, I'm okay. I don't care.
Yeah.
Because I did, yeah. I did horrible, horrible gigs. I did my time over 22 years in other horrible
yes.
ending clubs,
yes.
but mostly just bizarre. Yes. Like I did a show yeah. for Men That Make Carpet Fiber in Dalton, Georgia, and I don't think I'll ever get over it. First of all, half the people were Japanese. They did not know a thing I was saying. The other boys were these white men that looked at me like, I don't want to hear about doo-doo on a t-ball field
yeah.
and you yeah. peeing in your bathing suit. And I wanted somebody to shoot me. I really thought if somebody would just shoot me, I got through my material in 30 minutes. I was supposed to do an hour. I mean, I was pulling stuff out of my
yeah.
butt.
Mm-hmm. See ya.
So I've done yeah. terrible gigs, and done time. It's just been I had to do it in a different way because I had these three babies, and Brian Dorfman said to me at Zany's in Nashville 20 years ago, Leanne, you've got three babies. Roseanne raised hers in a station wagon in the parking lot of a club, and it didn't turn out well. And I said, you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, he was right when he said, Leanne, you cannot do this. And
yeah.
like, a club comment. You cannot do it. You got to raise these children. And he was right. And I wanted to. I wanted to be with for my children. I didn't want to leave them, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, and I can't imagine, obviously, how you feel, but I would imagine that's something that you still have to be so proud of, is that I doubt there are many regrets. You looking back, raising your kids, going, I should have been on the road.
I really don't. Now, I did miss a couple of international nights at CAK, at Christian Academy of Knoxville, when they would dress up like Greek people. You know, and that I missed a couple of those. And I feel bad over that. But no, their daddy had to miss a lot because he was out making a living for all of us. There's another thing,
yeah,
Dave.
That's right.
I was so lucky that I had a husband who believed in me and would say, whatever you want to do. And he made the living. I didn't have to get out here and make a
yeah.
living. You know, I didn't, and I could pick and choose what I did.
Yeah, yeah. Golly. So do you feel like, because it seems like on the outside, it just, what do you think the meteoric sort of last few years can be attributed to, other than obviously you being hysterical? But like, do you feel like now that sort of the kids are all out and moving, you sort of were able to put the attention to it that you wanted to? Or do you think social media sort of was this perfect timing of everybody was like, oh my gosh, we can share this stuff so quick? Like my sister and I, where she's sending me I'm going to start laughing. When she's sending me the swim dress, that bit, Leanne, I'm starting to laugh, cry right now, but I listened to that. And I must have sent that. I made my wife, we were laying in bed and I was on my phone, about to go to sleep. And she was like, what are you laughing at? I was like, let me just finish it and then I'll give it to you. And then she started laughing just as hard. And the stuff is ridiculous. And it's so easy to share. I mean, you've been so smart to put them up in, you know, sizable bits that sort of can get moved along quickly, you know. But what do you think happened that have you been able to trace back this sort of last
Yeah, honey,
years
I'll tell you exactly what happened.
Insanity.
Okay, so my manager has stuck with me for 14 years in LA. And when I couldn't, honey, I had a crash thyroid, or I'd have one of my kids go off to college and I'd take to the band. And he has stuck by me no matter what. God love him. And I said to him, I go, before that, I was going to do, this is how glamorous my life was. Okay, I was going, and I had television deals. They didn't make it. And then, you know, that's big disappointment. And then after, yeah. you know, two or three of them, you realize how this rodeo works and you're like, I don't trust any of them.
Right,
anyway,
right.
He said to me, Leanne, you're going to go out and do this. Now, this is how unglamorous my life was. And I love the guy that hires me to do this. And we're still really good friends, little Barry. But I was hired to do a Dubuque Chamber of Commerce luncheon. Now, that's how glamorous my career was going, Dave. I was doing the Dubuque Chamber of Commerce luncheon, not even the night gig.
Right.
The luncheon.
Right.
So my manager said, Lynn, there's these people out in Utah are doing this thing called Dry Bar, and it's a special.
Oh, yes.
And he said, nobody will ever hear from it. Nobody will ever see it, but we'll get some good video. And he goes, so I'm going to sign you. They want you. I'm going to get. And honey, we did not think. Nobody had ever heard of it. It was new.
That is
so
crazy.
I go out there and do a bunch. He goes, just do some old material to get it on, you know, just to do it because you don't want to do your new material. And so I did my old doo-doo ball, t-ball, all that. And I think I did. Lord, I don't even remember. Anyway,
yeah,
you did.
I've seen it.
I had a terrible spray tan. The spray tan had rubbed off. And there's a lot of things that I'd love to tell you was going wrong. Anyway, I did that special thinking nobody would ever hear from it again. And but darn if they didn't
explode
it. And then that gave me, I got a lot of work that year from that. But it was like, it was sweet things. But it was, I was still doing the grind where it was a certain amount of money and it, you know, and pay your travel out of it and it, you know, fine, but not great.
So then
I sent, but they gave me the money to say, you know what? I said to my manager, I go, I noticed that Jim Gaffigan, I'm a huge fan of Jim Gaffigan and, Nate Bargatze was just exploding. And I was looking at everything they were doing. And I said, somebody's doing their social media. And my manager goes, oh, that's so expensive. You don't need to be doing, you know, you can't do that. And I thought, you know what, for the first time in my career, I'm gonna give this a whirl. And if I'm going to hire somebody. Wow. And if it doesn't, because I knew, you know, it's no longer the newspaper, radio, all that stuff we used to do. Now it's this social media, you know, and mine was pitiful. And I don't know how to do any of that. Yeah. You know, I could barely turn on this so you and I could talk. So this is a God thing. I found these two young guys in Plano, Texas, and I hired them and I thought I'm going to give it, because it is expensive, and I thought I'm going to give it 2 or 3 months and just see what happens. If something doesn't happen,
oh my gosh,
I'm going to, and my dream was, you know, to be in theaters and people find my audience and sell out and do these beautiful theaters.
Yeah.
And I thought, if this does not happen, then I'm going to retire out of this, and I'm going to go to work at Target.
Wow.
I really did. I thought, I'm going to go to work at Target, and I'm going to put the bedding up in the back on those shelves. I've always thought
that
would be fun.
You knew what was going to happen at Target, is everybody be like, Liam, why are you going to comedy?
They still make popcorn, yes, I would. I'd be, honey, I would be doing that popcorn and talking.
Come on.
But, so... honey,
they just clear out the clothes in the back corner, and it's literally just a venue for you.
I would have had a ball. I really would have, and I would have known everybody. And
you'd have killed it. You'd have had your own little Branson corner
and I would have found that everybody's personal business that worked at Target. But
and that's so much comedy.
Oh,
so
I know.
Much,
so I
many
need
new
to
still
bits. Go work at Target. But anyway, that all the these two boys. And I call them boys because my son's 28 years old, and these are young men. They're, you know, they're 30, and they've got little babies. But they were precious, and they put out the second video, I think, was the one that went viral. And I started with them on October the 1st, and I moved my baby child into a school in Manhattan. We were in a hotel room with her suitcases, and I said, something's happening with this video.
Because were you getting texts
stuff? I just noticed these notifications, and I thought, they're sharing it.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And Drybar had already had multi-million views, but it did not translate into ticket sales. Like, my manager got me out, and I was in clubs working, and I couldn't sell tickets, and they were like, we love her. She doesn't get drunk and fight in the parking lot, but we're not having her back. And so I thought, my life is over, and that's fine, and I'm going to hang this thing up. And then...
Wow.
That video went viral, and that something about that, people started going, what else does she have? I think is what happened. And then they started looking at Drybar, and they started looking at all the others. And I had, you know, 22 years of material. So these young guys just started putting this stuff out, and people started following me.
That is crazy. And so you saw it just felt like wildfire.
It felt like a wave. I could feel the wave. I could feel I was riding a wave. I'm not kidding. I don't even know how to describe it. But I said to my husband,
wow,
something is happening. And everybody was like, be quiet. Get this big suitcase and get in this Uber. You know, because we were trying to ride. And everybody was like, yeah, whatever.
You're like, my career is exploding, folks.
I said,
folks.
Something.
Okay, could you give me 5 minutes?
Yeah, something is happening. And they were like, yeah. Because they've listened to me for years. Like, oh, I've got to deal with ABC. Yeah. I got to deal with, so what? And then I get paranoid in my own mind thinking, am I like these American Idol kids that think they can sing? I think maybe I am cooking. Yeah, yeah. But anyway, all that's when it happened. And then I started selling tickets everywhere. I mean, everywhere. Everywhere I went, sell out in minutes.
Crazy.
It went from my manager telling people she'd like to come back to the Tampa Improv. And they're like, lover, darling, no. To, can she do 5 shows? We've sold out,
Jeez,
I know. It was crazy. And then I got paranoid and thought that people were going to think, oh, she's one of these, not that anything's wrong with these YouTubers, but she's not really a comedian. She's come out with some.
A comedian.
But I've been doing this for 22 years. And I just happened I just found my audience at 50, what was I then? 53, 52 years old.
And they just came in
droves.
I was looking at your Instagram page today. I mean, these are huge theaters you're doing.
I know. And let me tell this is what I think, Dave. I think that, and what do I know? But this is what I think. I think that nobody is speaking to my demographic. And I think nobody, it's not that people don't care about them, but Hollywood's not putting them as a priority.
Yeah.
And these are just everyday women. Yeah. And I got a lot of men fans too that are, but it's just everyday. You angel.
I mean, I'm
one of them. I'm shocked.
Oh, there's a
you cute thing with your hair.
Stop. Quote unquote with your hair.
And teeth. Pretty teeth.
I still got them. Okay, so I want to talk about being funny for a minute and how funny you are. I have a few questions for you. Does your husband think
you're funny? I don't think so. Dave, and he'll say, I've heard it. And I go, no, you haven't. No, you haven't heard
this.
And, and I do think that he, I think he thinks I'm pretty. And I think he thinks, he still wants to make out with me and stuff. But I think he...
I do think
that his sense of humor is more... now, he does get tickled every once in a while, but it's rare.
It can be extremely difficult to open up to another person about what's going on in your life. It's hard enough to talk to your closest friends and family about your troubles, much less a complete stranger. That's why I'm so glad Talkspace makes it easy to talk to a certified therapist from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Unlike traditional therapy, you can message your therapist at any time of day via text, video, or voice. It's 100% secure and totally stigma-free, exactly the way therapy should be. Therapy is too important to your overall health to skip, and Talkspace makes it so easy and approachable. Talkspace really puts the therapist or counselor's office right at your fingertips, and without any stuffy lobbies or having to wait more than a week, sometimes a month, just to get an appointment. No matter if you struggle with depression, anxiety, self-doubt, you name it, Talkspace gives you access to the help you need and the tools to move forward. There's really no substitute for therapy, especially from Talkspace's certified professionals. Stop digging yourself in a hole and get the help you need for your mental health today. Join Talkspace today and start moving forward with a single message. Just visit Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month when you use the promo code DADVILLE at sign up. That's $100 off at Talkspace.com, promo code DADVILLE. Look, it's been a couple hard years for everybody. Seems like there's never been a better time to start talking about it than now.
This is the difference. I'm a Saturday Night Live, Will Ferrell person. He's a Monty Python person. And I'm, saying? So I don't.
Yes.
He did see me at the Ryman. He did. I made him sell t-shirts. And he did say,
oh my gosh.
He said there were some things in there that he remarked over, and it made me feel good. But no, my kids think I'm funny, and they're very funny.
Okay, that was my next question.
They think I'm funny.
So your daughters and son can, they'll laugh with you. That if you say something in the kitchen or they come up,
until
y'all start
giggling together. Yes, we're weak and we can't make a fist.
Okay. And meanwhile, your husband's kind of unamused.
Yeah,
but he's
and
he's just sort of,
y'all, I'm trying to watch.
It's funny. My wife is not, she's not that bad, but it's not real far off. Like it is, because people ask me a lot. They're like, I mean, it's always two questions. Does your wife just love your love songs? And I'm like, one, she couldn't care less. So she couldn't care less. And then two, they say, does she just laugh all the time? I'm like, no, she doesn't. She really, like, there's a lot of, please stop. We got to get them out to school. Like, Dave, come on. And I'm like, but I'm in the middle of something. It's getting my little guy, Sam. He's laughing. So Sam, check this out. And she's like, this is, come on. You know, let's go. So I do think there is something to having a, and I love her for that. If she was amused by me, it'd be the end. I mean, it would just be the, I'd have too much power.
Yeah, you know, and your little children wouldn't go
to school. Somebody.
Oh. Somebody's got to run things, you know. Is she the type A anal retentive one? Is she the driven retentive?
Yes. She's very driven, A type black and white. So it is funny because we would have a cult. Like if she thought I was funny, we'd just have a cult. We'd just be living in our basement drinking Kool-Aid. Like everybody'd be laughing at me. I'd be miserably unhappy all at the same time. Okay, that's mildly encouraging me here that your husband is maybe easier.
Yeah, it keeps you humble.
So let me ask you this. It does. Well, it does, and I think too for me, it's just like, you know, it's good for me because when she does laugh, it is like a symphony. I just feel like, and I'm like, and it's so funny because I'm like, what'd I just do? And she's like, you just, and I'm like, oh God, is that funny? And she's like, it got me. And I'm like, oh, shoot, I wouldn't even, hold on, let me run it again. I can do it better. What did I say?
And that's probably your love language, words of affirmation.
It is. Let me tell you.
And I don't get them.
It is. That's why I talk so much.
I don't get them. I said to my husband today, because he was trying to grab me somewhere, and I said, could you say, I missed you, you look pretty, something?
Any of it. Isn't that, that's a whole other thing. The love languages thing is so hysterical because, like, you know, hers is acts of service, and she's just the best. She's the best. She will do these things, and they're so sweet, and it means the world. And I'll tell her how beautiful she is every day, 100 times a day.
She doesn't care.
You know, I'll come home. She's cleaned the house. She's like, she's just standing there staring at me. I'm like, what? She's like, and I'm like, you look pretty. She's like, no. What's the other thing? And I'm like, I don't know. The Clorox bit, by the way, killed me. I'm going to start using that. That was
genius.
Thank
you, my darling.
So let me ask you this about the live show. How much are you changing jokes in real time? Like, are you reading the room, adding things? Or are you pretty good about kind of sticking to sort of what you know? Or if it's really working one night and you're like, man, they are just in. And you know, are you sort of chasing that? Or are you trying to kind of keep it?
I chase that. If it's like that kind of magical stuff, I chase that.
Yeah,
now,
yeah,
when
yeah,
I'm
yeah,
in
yeah.
clubs, I yeah. can do a lot more of whatever I want to do and talk to people and all that. In these big theaters, I can't. Yeah. And this is now that I'm at this level I'm trying to work on a tight hour.
Yeah, right.
And everybody's like a new hour, like every 8-9 months. And see, I didn't come up, you know, it used to be where Richard Pryor did one special in 10 years, you can live off that. You can't do that anymore.
Right.
You got to go ever. It's just,
yeah.
I would love to be able to just do whatever, but I'm working on this tight hour and I do a little bit of both, I guess. You know, like in San Antonio, because I live there, I talk for 20 minutes about San Antonio. And things about that, them.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, because I loved it. Yeah. We were there for 3 years. And then Houston, not so much. I talked a little bit about Sam Houston, you know, because Davy Crockett in Tennessee. But
that
I've built like Sam Houston now. But and then I'm trying to think, Durant, Oklahoma, I probably kept it pretty much on script, probably.
Yeah.
But
it's
just different every night. It's different every night.
Well, you know what? This is random, and the people listening to this podcast are going to roll their eyes so hard because I've talked about this every time. But it was one of the biggest takeaways that I had. So 3 years ago in 2018, I had a tour where I did 45 minutes of music, 15-minute intermission, then 45 minutes of stand-up. And it was really fun. But the rooms were super different. So I do 300 people in Portland, and then you know, I did the Bijou in Knoxville, and here I did the Ryman in Nashville. And it was such a weird, talk about it, on the job training, where, you know, 300 people, and this is why when you said theater, it made me think of this, it's fast. I mean, they've laughed and it's
mm-hmm.
done quick.
Uh-huh.
And you're off to the next joke, right? Boy, the Ryman I've never learned so much in real time as that show, because you do a joke and then the laugh would take 5 seconds. And you're just kind of standing, okay. And so with these theaters, I have to imagine for you, that's got to be another thing you're learning, to your point about not doing crowd work or whatever, is you're like, oh, wow, I can't do that bit that killed last night at the smaller room or whatever, or last tour or last year or whatever, doesn't translate here because people, you know, you got to do a pace they can hear clearly, see you clearly. You know, you're doing a few thousand people. It's like you can't do the things that may have been really fun about two tours ago, but it's more people, so it's fun that way. The energy's different. But that was such a crazy thing for me, and I remember laughing so hard at myself because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know physically what to do because the you know, pace I'd gotten used to and how, where I stood and how I did, suddenly was taking twice as long because there's all these people.
Yeah.
Couple thousand people in the run, and you're having to, and I'm standing there and I don't just, okay, no, oh, nodding, oh, thank you, okay, oh, all right, thank you, okay, oh, still laughing, okay. I'm gonna walk over here and then look at these, you know, it's just things that I was like, oh, I guess that's like a thing. That's
yeah, and let me tell you, when I did arenas, I just did two arenas with Jeff Foxworthy and one with Nate Bargatze.
Oh gosh, what is that like?
I mean, that freaked me out because that's, you know, 5,000 people. So that laugh, that I had my friend Reno Collier that I had a Sirius XM radio show with years ago, he said, because he opened for Larry the Cable Guy for years, and he said, oh, Leanne, that's a whole different animal. So he said, make sure you can see people's faces in the front row and just go by what they're doing.
Wow.
Because he said,
wow,
there's a delay.
Don't know otherwise.
He goes, because it's so big.
Jeez.
I know. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the Bridgestone? I mean,
I don't know what
the world that would be like.
Yeah, you just keep talking because
you don't know what's going on.
Are you guys laughing? Are people mad at me? Is what's happening? So do you think it's hard to be funny without being dirty? Do you find that challenging?
No, but I just I don't know. I think being a mama, I just thought from the word go, it just did not feel right to me to be. I mean, I talk about, you know, prostituting myself to my husband and stuff, but being like nasty, it just, I guess I always had this thing, I didn't want to say anything that I didn't want my children to say. So I just,
I
just didn't, and my grandparents would say, Jesus is watching, like every time I left the house, they go,
Jesus is watching.
And I am a believer, and so I didn't want to do anything that I didn't want him to be proud of.
Yeah. Right,
to glorify God.
Right.
And so I...
even though the churches didn't
like some people were like, I cannot believe that you said so-and-so, you urinated, you know. I believe that was God going, we ain't going here, girl. I think that he wanted me in places where they're already believing in church. They're already there.
Yeah.
They don't need me.
Yeah.
And I also would say this, and I'm not comparing myself to Johnny Cash, but I remember Johnny Cash saying once something about, you know, I'm a believer, but I'm going to talk about prison and, you know, being on drugs and all the things he went through. Mm. And I just have always thought I want to be able to say whatever I want to. And because it's, you know, I want to be truthful and I got something to say and I want to be able to say it.
Yeah, that's great. It's funny, my music career, when I started, I thought I was going to do the Christian thing because, hey, I'm a Christian. I was like, sure. And I'm telling you, Leanne, I would write these songs that I thought were Christian, and they were so bad. I'd play them for my friends, and they were like, Dave, that's one of the worst songs I've ever heard. And you can't rhyme Freeze Us with Jesus. It's too easy. So then it was like, I started writing these love songs and other songs, and all of a sudden people were like, this is really good. And I was like, well, that's interesting. So for me, it felt very, I just think God was like, this is where I need you. And it's not in that space. I have people doing that, and they're great, and that's what they want to do. And that was the other thing, too, I realized, is I would talk to people and who were in the Christian music space, and they were like, I want to be here. And I was like, oh, okay. Not that I didn't. Like, I wasn't like, but I was just like, I don't feel as comfortable there. So it's interesting to hear you say that about your comedy, because I definitely, my beginnings, I just thought, surely this is going to be a church thing. It just never worked. And then I'd go to a club or, you know, a bar, a college or whatever, and it was like, man, this is so much easier and more fun, even though I didn't think at the time, like, because I just did not, you know, my dad was a pastor, and I did not grow up in that world at all, like, at all. I didn't take a drink of alcohol until I got married because Anne hated me because she's a sinner that way. But I remember going to bars for the first time, Leanne, and I just literally thought, I don't know what I'm going to see in here. They're probably going to be people having
fornicating,
you know, some kind of relations. Yeah, fornicating in the corner. And I don't even know if the crowd's going to be clothed. I'm not kidding. I really thought I was going to get on stage and it just be like, close your eyes and sing, because if you open your eyes, it's going to be Dante's Infernos, like in front of you. And it just wasn't. It was, it was just people. It's same
people everywhere.
Right? You know?
Yeah. But I was in those bars doing God knows what in the 80s when I was lost. And, you know, I think about it. I look back and I think, oh, my gosh, God knew better than if I'd have gone to L.A. and done during all that time.
Yeah.
It's no telling what I would have. Oh.
Yeah.
And then I think about these children. If I had gotten those television deals, I look back on it and think, they would not be the people they are if I'd raised them in Los Angeles. So, you know, everything has just worked out for the best. It really has.
Well said.
And I'm not trying to be.
Well said.
But
That's
it
true.
Has.
No.
I'm just amazed by it.
I think, too, I'm it's fun to hear you talk about it, because I do think, you know, for you to be able to navigate this season of your career when you're in the headspace you are, too, you know, where you can think about it in a way as a grown woman as opposed to a 20-year-old girl that's just everything, you know, is working, and all of a sudden you're, you know, but instead going, no, I know who I am. I know I'm a mother, I'm a sister, a wife, a daughter. Like, I live here. This is where my people are. And then I go do shows and we have fun and we laugh, not sort of like, you tell me who I am and I'll be whoever that
is.
Yes,
you know? Dave, you smart thing.
Which is tricky. You know what they say, quality meat is like a fine wine. It just gets better with age. That's not exactly what the quote is, but I do know a quality meat, like the delicious cuts from ButcherBox, pair very well with a fine wine. How about that? There's nothing that beats ButcherBox's high-quality meats. It tastes better, it's more ethical, and it's more sustainable. Every year, we have steak for Christmas dinner. Call me crazy, that's what we do. And when it comes to the culinary centerpiece to one of our favorite meals the entire year, investing in high-quality meat from ButcherBox makes all the difference. Aside from the incredible quality of 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, wild-caught seafood, and more, ButcherBox is so convenient. They do all the work for you. Nothing beats opening your front door and finding your monthly shipment of ButcherBox sitting right there at your doorstep, just waiting for you to get it in your guts. You know what I'm saying? Every month, ButcherBox ships a curated selection of meat right to your home. They even throw in free shipping for the continental U.S. You don't have any excuses, folks. All of ButcherBox's meats have no antibiotics or added hormones, guaranteed. With each box, you'll receive between 8 to 14 pounds of meat, depending on your choice. That's enough for 24 individual meals. 24 meals. That's going to get you through the holidays and into maybe June of next year. You're free to customize your own box or pick one of ButcherBox's curated selections. This holiday, ButcherBox is giving new members one pack of bacon for free in every box. I'm crying a little bit right now from excitement. Plus $20 off each box for the first 5 months of your membership. That's free bacon for life and up to $100 off free bacon for life. Sign up at ButcherBox.com/Dadville. That's ButcherBox.com/Dadville.
Well, and I think...
I'm reading all this.
And I think, you know, I know people that have, you know, had comedy careers in L.A., and they're from the South, and Blue Collar was big and blew up, and so all these people started, you know, talking with an accent and saying a bunch of stuff that wasn't authentic. And I think that at this time in my life, I think I've pretty much been true to who I am the whole time, but I'm too tired to be... to not be who I am, and I've never changed my accent.
There you go.
But I think there's, I think that's the key of what's happening to me, is it's authentic.
Yeah.
And I'm not, I didn't go to LA where that's somebody made me feel like, well, what does industry want? What do you think they, you know, and try to mold into something that I'm not.
Yeah.
And now I got these women all over the United States who, people that are taking care of kids, launching children, got elderly parents that are taking care of. They're going through menopause, or they're, you know, their children are going off to college, or whatever it is. And they've all been through what I've been through. And it's like a bunch of friends. It's really like a bunch of friends talking.
That's, You know, okay, I've got two more questions after this, and I'll release you back to the wolves of your family. But I do, you know, that is a thing with me, and I've talked about this on some of these interviews before, but that's my favorite humor. Comedy, call it whatever you want. But when I feel like everybody is in, you know, and I mean, I love performing, but there's nothing better than when you feel like this just feels like a huge dinner. It just feels like a massive dinner with a bunch of people and we're just having a good time talking. That is to me when I'm like, this is the best. You know, it's inclusive. It feels like everybody's in on the joke, you know, like that. It's, I love the way you just said that. That's how I feel too. Okay, two more quick questions. What do you think, what's the thing that nobody knows about being a professional comedian or someone, like what's the difference to you between being like funny and then being a comedian, like a professional comedian? What are the things that people wouldn't know about the difference in those?
The
things?
Difference between being funny and being a professional comedian. Oh, like when you, I meet people all the time that go, oh, I could do that. And what, like, you know, you're talking about like, they don't understand how it takes years to develop 30 minutes, 10 years to do 45, your first 45, and it'd be good, you know? Yeah. And I don't think people understand, like I get people all the time and I get it, you know, they'll go, oh, get a load of Diane down here at the furniture store. She's a hoot. Diane, come here. Tell her about, you know, and I'm going, and Diane's darling, precious. I'm sure Diane and I would enjoy a good jazzercise class with each other, but being a comedian is like, it is hard. And I don't mean the telling the joke part. I don't mean that. I'm talking about the rejection, the bombing, people making you feel terrible. You didn't sell enough tickets. Yeah. You didn't do this. You didn't do that. All these people coming here drinking all the Diet Coke. All the stuff that goes with being a professional comedian, it is a hard job. There are people living out of a Ford Festiva, smoking marijuana, pushing down terrible feelings. But there's something's got to be a little off to get up and put your soul out on stage. So, I mean, I understand there's something, you know, that I got to be able to tell this. There's something going on with me that I want to do this, but it is a hard, it's not the same as just being funny. I wish it were.
Yeah.
Cause I think I'm naturally funny. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, my family is, I think, but being a professional comedian, I've had ups and downs and times I couldn't get arrested and people, and then other times they tell you you're on top of the world and you're the best thing that's ever happened to us. And we love you, love you, love you. We want to do a show about your, based on your comedy, but let's change everything about you. I mean, you just go through, it's a lot of valleys and a lot of mountaintops. Some people don't have any mountaintops. It is a hard job. Is that what you're asking me, my angel? Is that what?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Well, you know, too, I mean, this is what, it's been fun sort of talking to the other comics about is, you know, that's where my career is such a cheat code, you know, because music, you know, I said this, I think Dustin and I were talking about this, Mike, but like how, if you have, you know, if you're at a coffee shop in New York City and it's 10 PM and the show is, you've seen a good little folk artist and you're loving it. He ends the show. All of a sudden Sting walks in with a guitar and walks up and says, can I do a couple new songs? You're like, oh my gosh, it's Sting. They can be the worst songs you've ever heard in your life, literally, like about clowns and dragons, and you're like, where? But when he gets done, you're still going to be like, his voice was amazing, and his guitar part. There's so many things that are still redemptive, even though it was bad.
Right.
The thing that's so different to me about comedy is, and you can see this in the comedian show with Seinfeld. Seinfeld walks in and bombs, and people are mad. There's nothing redemptive about being unfunny. In fact, it's maybe I was saying this to somebody on one of these, but it feels the opposite because their expectations are so high. And when you're expected to be funny and you're not funny, it's one of the worst things in the world. And I think that's something that people just really don't understand. It's like, you know, when people are like, oh, she's going to be great. And then you can have a bit or two that doesn't work. You've almost done damage. It's not even like you didn't just do well. It's like people leave mad. You know, they're like, we want to keep your car.
You're right, though. Which I think it is such a different,
admirable thing, though.
Yeah.
It takes so much bravery.
It does,
you know?
But you're right. People treat us differently than they do other performers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they say in Hollywood, oh, they're the stepchildren of entertainment business. You know, like very few go over into movies and television. And, you know, when you think
I
think people think that because we're comedians that we don't have a heart, that we don't hurt.
Yeah.
They say terrible things to us, and then and go, oh, yeah. Well, I thought you had a sense of humor. Well, it doesn't mean that I'm not human. You know, it's right, a weird right, thing that right. people. Do you have other yeah. comedians say that to you on this?
That's verbatim. I mean, just how hard, yeah, like how hard it is to not be funny and then juggle that and try to. I think what I admire so much in all of y'all is the bravery. It just takes a lot of courage. I mean, obviously you're good at it and it comes with the job, you know, but it takes a lot of like chutzpah to just keep getting honey. Up there.
And let me tell you that there's times this day where I'll walk in and think, I don't deserve to be here. What am I doing here? They're not going to like me. Or if I see one man with his arms folded in a crowd that looks like he wasn't happy, it yes. will ruin my yes. next 2 days. I'll be yes. up all night.
Yes.
I can't get to yes. sleep. It is a mind yeah. thing. It really is. And I think my good yeah. friend, Karen Mills, that we've traveled together with Southern Fried Chicks since 2004, and she's been in a horrible car accident. She was supposed to open for me on all these dates. For the rest of the year, I had to get people to replace her. She's supposed to be with me in 2022. Wow. She's going to be okay, but I mean, a very traumatic injuries. But she and I I'm so glad I've had her, because we would call each other after doing a gig and go, I'm quitting. I'm quitting tonight.
Yeah.
And she'd go, you know, you're not. Yeah. You'll be okay. They're all right. And then she'd call me and go, I just did a show for the Egg Association. I'm quitting. And I'd go, no, you're going to make it. Never. But it's good to have somebody, you know, that goes through it and has gone yes. through the rejection and, yes. You know, yes. a little man at a Marriott that's doing the sound that says, hope you don't suck. You know, here's the mic, you know, and you're like,
oh my God.
Or you do, you know, comedy for the people who, the accounting department of whatever, so-and-so, and they're blank as doors, and we need accountants, God love care. Them. We need them. But, that's a hard question.
You're just staring into the abyss,
It's a very hard business, and people go, oh, well, I could have done that, or, you know, good luck, go ahead, you know, Janine, try it, girl, get up at that's the
right.
open mic,
right.
go ahead,
So, okay, so here is the last question, by the way. This has been
Dave, I don't want it to end, you angel. You doll. I'll come and clean your house.
You, please.
It looks beautiful.
As long as you're talking and making me laugh the whole time, I'll just follow you around and help you. Okay, so if you can have dinner, or you're going to have dinner with three other funny people, and they can be dead or alive, so three other funny people, and you get to pick anybody you want, who are they?
Oh, my God.
You and three other people.
Okay, let me think. Because I have so many. I'm a fan of so many people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I think all right, are we talking just stand-ups, not comedic actors?
Anybody you think is funny.
I love Molly Shannon, Will Ferrell.
Yes. Yep.
Oh gosh, there would be.
God, they would be hysterical.
Oh my! Because I'm sitting here thinking of every stand-up that I've ever loved. I've loved Jay Leno. I love Kevin Meaney. I used to love Kevin Meaney. Oh my gosh, I love Jerry Seinfeld. I mean, there's a million. But let's say Will Ferrell, Molly Shannon, and then. And then, Red Skelton.
Oh, wow.
Is that crazy?
That's amazing.
I loved him.
That's an amazing thing.
Well, I don't know.
That's amazing.
I don't know. He could have been a psychopath for all I know, but I've always thought I love Red Skelton. I love Lucille Ball, Carol Burnett.
Yes.
I mean, but oh my gosh, I'm sitting here thinking of comedians and saying I love all of them. I love Nate Bargatze. I love Jeff Foxworthy. I mean, I loved all of them. Ron White.
Yeah.
Ellen DeGeneres. I mean, I've loved all of them. I love to sit and watch stand up. I love John Rivers.
Yeah, it's a really watching someone that does it well. I don't think there's anything like it in the world.
Who do you love, Dane? Tell me who you love.
This is about you today. I think if it were I haven't thought about this. Okay, so three that I would have for sure: Jonathan Winters. He to me is the funniest human that's ever walked the face of the earth.
So funny.
He would be there. Martin Short.
Okay, can I change one of mine to Martin Short? Honey, love him. Yes. Steve Martin. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I think maybe, that's really hard. I don't know who the third would be. Maybe Sinbad.
Honey, I work with Sinbad, and let me tell you.
Is he the funniest person ever?
Yes, and sitting backstage with him, he just talked about, like, his knees feeling bad. And I had my head between my knees. I was laughing so hard. That, yes, you're right. Precious Sinbad, who's had a stroke.
I know.
I think he's, you know, recovering. And I hope everything's going all right, because you're right. Precious. So funny. Sit and talk about.
I saw him. Anything. He was at the Tennessee Theater. I was playing. What's the festival they used to do in downtown Knoxville? Sundown in the City, right? Sundown.
Was it Big Ears Festival? Sundown, or maybe it was Sundown.
It was right there in the. Okay. So I played that, closed that one night for their thing years ago. And the promoter came up and he's like, hey, Sinbad's playing over across the street at the Tennessee Theater. You want to go see it? And I was like, oh my gosh, yes. So I stood side stage for about an hour. I'd never seen anybody do this. I talked about this on one of the podcasts. He did his bits. He didn't do 30, 45 minutes. And then he just stopped. And he's like, all right, what do you want me to talk about? And I was like, I mean, it was Pat. And I was like, what is he doing? And Leanne, he was funnier then. He was funnier. People would be like, I remember one lady, like, why do men fight? And he said, what do you mean, why do men fight? And he just went 5-minute bit on that was just off the top of his head. He did it for probably 45 minutes. And I literally thought, I'm watching Picasso paint. Like, who can do this? He never, ever got stuck. People yelled the most random things, and he just was going. And they were all hysterical. Yeah. I was completely brilliant. Floored.
And, you know, right before he had the stroke, he messaged me on Instagram and said, I'm proud of you, girl. Oh. And I said, do you remember us being backstage? And he said, yes, I remember that. And that meant the world to me, because I love him. And you're right, he's one of the best. He's one of the best. Oh. And, you know, clean and never said, which I don't have anything against Dirty. I really don't. There's comedians I love. Chris Rock.
Yeah.
Dave Chappelle. Yeah. Oh, Dave Chappelle.
Oh, my gosh. Genius.
But I don't mind Dirty. It's just not what I do. But Sinbad, oh, my gosh, brilliant. Never say an ugly thing. Yeah. And just.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Darling, you're right. And
mine would be, my fourth would be Leanne Morgan.
Well, you angel, I'll make a meatloaf and bring it. And then we'll.
Thank you for that.
And a Jell-O salad.
Hey.
And we'll do that.
Thank you. So tell the people you're out. You're touring like a mad woman right now. So you're out doing your. Is it the panty?
The big panty, what's the name of the tour? And I've got 100 dates.
Right. And it's going through. Yeah, it's a lot of dates. I saw. Like, you're going to be everywhere.
Yeah, and it. The next couple of. When does this air, my darling?
Next couple of weeks.
I will be in St. Louis and Evansville, Indiana, and that December the 3rd and 4th, that'll be my last dates for the year, and I get to be home. And then January will start, and it'll be on like Donkey Kong, honey. And I'm working every, and people can go to leannemorgan.com and see where I'm going to be, because I don't know. Right. I ain't even looked at it.
They
tell me every week, get in the car, Leanne, and go head to, and I just go where I'm going, but I'm having a ball, and it is precious people everywhere I go that are darling, that have loved on me, my mama being sick, my grandbaby, everybody. Like, here's a Jell-O salad recipe. It's just like being with your best friends.
I like that you edited it so they didn't give you the Jell-O salad. They gave you the Jell-O salad recipe. Is there anything worse than somebody giving you a recipe? It's just giving you work.
Oh, well.
They're like, I'm not going to make it for you. I'm just going to make you go make it.
But, honey, it's been from heaven. It has been, like, crazy.
Well, I am so glad you are doing it, because you are so ridiculously funny. You make me smile and laugh so hard. You're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my angel. And I know I've talked your head off. Thank you for letting me talk
ramble. No. You're the best. You're the best.
Thank you. Honey, thanks. I'll take care of your kids. If y'all need to go to Gatlinburg on a trip. Drop them off here, and I'll tend to your little children. And y'all go and probably get pregnant again is what would happen.
That's why we're not going. We are not going. We are not doing that. Thank you all for listening to It's Hard Being an Idiot podcast. And make sure to check out my stand-up comedy album called It's Hard Being an Idiot everywhere you listen to music and comedy.